In antiquity, this text, the books of Moses, was probably the only text taught to children who had any formal education. We sometimes forget this. In the Greco-Roman world, there was a wealth of literature that could be used, that could be introduced into the school system. It might be poetry, it might be history. Judaism had no secular literature. And the education of children was intended to make them literate of this and knowledgeable of this Torah. And so this was the text that was studied. The second segment of the Hebrew Bible are the books of the prophets. They cover the period from Israel's settlement in the land of Canaan after the death of Moses. And as we've seen in an earlier lecture, they come down to the end of the first temple period, the destruction of the first temple, and basically they wind up there. While some of these books contain historical narrative, the majority of the books of the prophets are exhortations of these same prophets to their contemporaries. And they include the castigation of people, and particularly of their leaders, for their sins. They frequently entail foretelling of either imminent or distant events. And of course they allude to the hopes for a rejuvenated national and universal order. Now the prophets also enjoy a role in the synagogue service, but in truth, it's a secondary role. Not all the books of the prophets are read in their entirety in the synagogue service. Within the period of a year, all of the Torah is read, but only portions of the books of the prophets are appended, are added to the reading of the books of Moses. Traditional Judaism, however, made one very important point regarding the prophets. Prophets could not introduce and were not expected to introduce new laws or abrogate existing ones. The basic assumption of Judaism was that their role is primarily to promote the requisite moral behavior of the people of Israel. This is very, very important, because Jews would have an aversion not only to prophets interfering in the legal system, but there are beautiful stories in rabbinic literature where even revelation from God himself cannot interfere in the legal system. And you have stories where there were debates in the academy and a voice came out of the heavens and said, Rabbi so-and-so is correct, to which the rabbis in the academy would respond, basically, butt out. Prophets cannot change the law. God cannot change the law. The law was given to human beings and it is for them to interpret and apply. The third section of the Hebrew Bible, in Hebrew referred to as ketuvim, or scriptures in a very general sense, because indeed it is a collection of a very variegated genre. You find there wisdom literature, poetry, as well as some historical narratives. Now the largest book in this third component, I think many of us are familiar with, the book of Psalms. Those scores of beautiful poems that at one time were attributed either in their entirety or partially to King David himself. Although we know that some of the Psalms were clearly written much, much after the time of David. The scriptures contain unique books known as scrolls. The Hebrew word is Megillot. And there are five scrolls that are read on five different occasions during the Jewish liturgical year, during the calendar. These five books are the Book of Esther, the Song of Songs, or Solomon's Song, which, by the way, raised major problems among post-biblical scholars who could not imagine what an erotic love song is doing in the Bible. And the only solution was to interpret the Song of Solomon in an allegorical fashion. This could not mean what it says, right? That a lover or that two lovers are plotting to meet and they yearn for one another, because who really needs this in the Bible? No, it must be a love song between God and, if you were a Jew, between God and the people of Israel. If you were a Christian, between God and the church. Another book, the Book of Lamentations, describes, or rather weeps over the destruction of the temple.